You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A.
Hello and welcome to a special edition of the Fabulous Pelton Cast. I'm your co-host Kevin Pelton,
and I'm Tristan Carcino,
and we are coming to you from Boulevard Park, home of the Pelton Cast. And the Seahawks have lost to the San Francisco 49ers 26-21 in the final game of the NFL in the 2010s to lose the NFC West and finish as the number 5 seed in the NFC. And nothing much eventful happened.
Pretty thrilling conclusion to the decade of football.
Yeah. Yeah, NBC got its money's worth on this one. I think it was a better choice to put this one out there than, I don't even know what the alternative was.
Dolphins-Patriots.
Oh, I mean, that was pretty thrilling, but you wouldn't have had the moment of Kevin Harlan calling the Dolphins-Patriots game while he was nominally calling the Chiefs-Chargers game.
Wait, what happened?
He was just doing play-by-play of the Patriots-Dolphins game in the booth for Chiefs-Chargers so that Kansas City fans could know that they were going to get the 2 seed.
Wow.
It was an amazing moment. Only Kevin Harlan could have pulled it off. He's so good.
Week 17 football, baby.
And that's what we're here to discuss today, is again, the Miami Dolphins.
The AFC playoffs. solely AFC playoff seeding.
The Seahawks managed to play a relatively normal game for 55 or 59 minutes about here. And then in classic Seahawks on primetime fashion, shit got weird.
I think this was maybe the closest game that I have ever been to in my entire life, aside from the, I don't know what we want to call it in Seattle, the Fail Mary game. Right? Like that
simultaneous possession.
Simultaneous possession game. I think this game was closer. I mean, that one was incredibly close because nobody really knew who had possession on the last play of the game.
I mean, that was a Schrodinger's cat ending where the Seahawks both won and lost on the final play of the game.
But this was like,
you literally cannot come closer to scoring without scoring.
The distance, this wasn't Kevin Dyson on the goal line. This was way closer than that.
I mean, the only thing that was that close, is they pointed out on the broadcast, was Falcons 49ers earlier this season, where the 49ers were on the wrong end of this one.
That was really what it reminded me of for a second. And it was so tough to see at the stadium. Like, I guess, can you tell me how close was this? When you zoom in, did the football look in any angles like it crossed the goal line?
Yes.
We're going to get a camera angle tomorrow. Will people zoom in on this? Like, we're going to get some Zapruder tapes. Like Seahawks fandom tomorrow of the ball crossing the goal line.
I mean, I think it was appropriate on replay to stick with whatever you called on the field. If they had somehow called it on the field a touchdown, I think it would have stood on a touchdown. Now, funny enough, this, by the way, did happen earlier in the game where was that Kendrick Bourne on the 2-point conversion? For the 49ers, the 2-point conversion that they failed.
Uh-huh.
And he was very close to scoring on that one as well.
I had no idea he was that close to scoring.
I think on the same end of the field.
I thought he missed it by like 3 yards.
No, I mean, when the ball hit his chest, the ball was in the end zone, but it bounced off his chest into his hands, which were probably outside the end zone.
Is there a chance? Okay, let me ask you this question. When Tyler Lockett catches that ball in the one, is there a chance that he crossed the goal line?
No, I don't think so.
To get the first down? There's so many things that you don't see in the game. This is literally just me asking you about what happened on these replays that I didn't see.
I thought that was pretty close live, but then Ben Baldwin showed there was an angle that showed he had both knees down and was still short of the...
Tweet the angle! That shows Hollister in the end zone, Ben. But also, can we take a step back? And before this drive started, when the Seahawks received that punt, I thought to myself, this is it. This is why we pay attention to football. My heart is pounding because of other people doing a sport, right? Like, the whole idea is so absurd. But I'm more invested in these other people playing a sporting event than I've been in any other thing in my entire life, basically.
Wow, you were more invested in that than you were in Baby Fantasy Genius's 2-point conversion.
The 2-point conversion that would have won the championship. I think I was.
Wow.
I was pretty nervous about that one, too.
I thought I knew I could find one.
But no, that was only the regular season. This wasn't the playoffs.
True.
And it would have meant nothing. We were already in. We had already clinched our seating.
You were blown out in the playoffs when you lost.
I'm telling you, this is why we pay attention to sports. All I could think when they received this punt from the 49ers was, football's great.
Really?
Like, that's it. It wasn't. It was like, whatever happens on
football
the
strip,
they're either going to win or they're going to lose. But every single time we sit down to watch football, this is what we're looking for. A moment like this. I'm sorry, but blowouts are bad. I've talked to you about this
repeatedly.
We're
going to this again.
I don't like
Tristan dislikes Super Bowl 48.
Winning football. Honestly, Super Bowl 48, how many memories of that do you have? Not that many. You probably have more memories from Super Bowl 49.
Well, I have.
You need to see the darkness to care about something. And in this game, we saw the darkness.
So you're saying that this was a more important game than the 2013 and 2014 Week 17?
Super Bowls.
We saw some darkness, actually, in 2013 Week 17. I think they trailed at one point earlier in that game.
But no, I'm not saying that the importance of the game. There are games. I saw the darkness against Tampa Bay earlier this year. Like, it's not about the magnitude of the game.
That was Bruce Arians' Force Ghost.
That was just Bruce Arians' Force Ghost was over the Cardinals game.
True.
But this is why we pay attention to sports. Like, honestly, if you were a fan of a team that blew out every other team, it wouldn't be fun to watch.
I feel like Baltimore Ravens fans are probably having a good time this season. I'm going to agree to disagree with you there.
But that's because they don't win every game like this. If there was a hypothetical sports team that won every single game 100-0, it would not be fun to watch.
Well, sure. Like, there was...
Winning is bad.
This is really not a take I expected from you. Like, I remember there was this version of Tetris online several years ago where, like, every time you got the exact piece you needed, and it was like, there's no point to play in this. There's no challenge whatsoever.
I downloaded some bullshit crossword app because I wanted to do it with Luca, and I was like, he wasn't particularly engaged in it, but I was doing it, and I could finish the crossword app in like 3 minutes, and I'm like, why am I playing this? I deleted it immediately. You don't want things to be that easy. You want, in all things that you're competing in, sports, fandom, whatever, unless it's something that has actual magnitude, right? Like, if we could have had the 2016 presidential election and could have won every single state, that would have been great because that has real life magnitude. But this is a sporting event. It doesn't actually fucking matter, right? Like, the only reason we pay attention to sports is for entertainment purposes. So I want it to be entertaining. If in Star Wars, like the Jedi...
Well, no spoilers. I haven't seen it yet.
No, I'm not going to spoil anything. But I'm just saying, if the entire plot of every Star Wars movie was there's no negative thing happening in the universe and the Jedi's just control everything and everybody's happy, that's not an interesting movie, right? You need the Sith to like the Jedi.
There would probably be some debates about tax policy.
And the Sith are the San Francisco 49ers, and they have to win for a bit before the Jedi can return. And that's
why. When are the Jedi going to return?
In Star Wars Episode 6, Return of the Jedi.
I get that. In this analogy, when are the Jedi returning?
In perpetuity, every team either wins or loses. Like, I'm sorry, if you care about sports long enough, your team will win or they will lose. And the reason that you care about sports is because of moments like this. This was one of the best games that I've ever been to.
Huh, okay. You said people were not going to expect your take. And I agree. I did not expect this take from you. So should we talk about what happened on that drive?
Sure.
Some things happened.
God, I'm not saying that I'm thrilled about every moment. I'm just saying it was fun to be there and to experience this moment.
The Seahawks actually moved the ball really quickly, which ultimately may have been
too fast.
Their detriment.
I mean, there was a period where I was like, they need to run clock here.
Because they got it down to the 23-yard line. They took over just on the other side of the two-minute warning with 2:27 left and worked it all the way down to the San Francisco 23-yard line at the 1:37 mark. So...
that was the moment where they had to run clock.
That was the moment where all of a sudden it became like, uh-oh, are the Seahawks actually going to score too quickly? And
yes.
Is this, I mean, the thought was, is this going to be the...
Let me report that they did not.
Oh, thanks. Thanks. Narrator, they didn't. This is where you're having the thought, oh, is this going to be the Falcons playoff game all over again, where the Seahawks defense hasn't been able to hold the entire game?
I thought there was a chance that they would score in that moment. They would score, we'd obviously go for two, and then... depending on that two-point conversion. It was like the Niners were getting into field goal range.
Yes. It was almost guaranteed. Now, Robbie Gould might have missed that field goal, but that would have been too determined. Then things slowed down considerably. So Russell Wilson does take a lot of time off the clock after a completion down to the 12 to Tyler Lockett to pick up the first down. The first and 10 at the Niners 12 with 55 seconds left. Three consecutive incompletions there. Two of them targeted to DK Metcalf.
And one, was that the one where, I don't think this was it, where the ball just like went through DK's hands? Was that on a previous series?
I think that might have been the first down play here.
Okay.
No, I don't think, I think actually that was earlier in the drive, maybe. Just after the 2-minute warning. So then the Seahawks face 4th and 10 at the San Francisco 12. Now, one note, well, we'll get back to this in a second.
I thought you were talking about the 23.
Well, they had completed Tyler Lockett, picked up that first down, got into the 12.
My God, they were so good with those outs to Tyler Lockett on the first down. It was just like,
oh. It's like, where has this been for the last 5 weeks, Shai?
Where was that in the first half?
An excellent point.
Those plays were unstoppable. When that entered the offense, it was just like that and DK coming back. Look, anything that wasn't to the Richard Sherman side of the field.
So 4th and 10. Game on the line. Season on the line. NFC West on the line. Who should step up but a receiver who has never caught a pass in an NFL regular season game before? Is playing only because of injuries to Malik Turner and Jerron Brown, has been inactive most of the season despite spending the entire year on the roster. John Ursua makes a catch down to the 1 yard line.
That was John Ursua who got that ball?
Yeah, that was John
Ursua. I thought this was Tyler Lockett the entire time.
Oh, yeah.
That's why I was like, did the Lockett ball cross the goal line?
No, and Ursua did not cross the goal line either.
Wow.
Yes.
Even more thrilling.
I know. So there was a narrow range. They were at the 12. There was 2 yards there. They could get a first down but not score a touchdown. And they went into that band. And it turned out that they had no timeouts remaining at this point.
Okay, can we talk about this? I understand the idea of wanting to get the perfect play in. But if you know that there's a chance of a first down or whatever, save a fucking timeout. You don't need to call a timeout after both second and third down here, Pete.
Well, second was the especially costly one because in that case, it seemed to be that the play clock was running down was the reason they called it, not because of the fact that you're trying to set up a specific play. That's clearly what happened to the fourth down. Yeah, we will come back to it. Won't we?
But if you have a timeout here, the future is totally different.
Everything unfolds very differently because, so with the clock running, 42 seconds officially the time of that play. I didn't write down when the play actually ended. George Fant has to run up because of the fact that I believe someone said he got rolled up on that play.
Yeah.
Has to run up to the line to join everybody so that Russell Wilson can spike it.
Because there would have been a 10-second runoff if they would have taken a false start or whatever. They would have both lost the yardage and there would have been a runoff.
Correct. So 23 seconds left. Russell Wilson spikes it. You've got three plays now from the 1 yard line.
Number one, I understand the Fant injury is a question mark. I'm anti spike in every situation. I personally do not believe in the spike. There's never a situation, if you have enough time to run a spike, you have it. Maybe there's a couple of outlier situations where it makes sense. Let's say you're setting up to kick a field goal or something like that or whatever. In the situation where you're trying to gain yardage to score a touchdown, the down is more important than getting everybody set. Run a fucking play. You have a play that you're going to do if you need to run to the line.
Because you had plenty of time to run four pass plays in that situation.
Run a pass. Like, Russell, you're giving up an advantage that you have on the other team for nothing. Literally nothing. You're just saying, here's a down, we don't need it. End the spike.
But after the spike, it occurs to me. Suddenly I place my head in my hands because I realize, oh my God, it's the exact same situation as Super Bowl 49.
Like, we all knew it was the exact same situation.
It took me a second to register.
I think because they were at the 2 that time, or are they officially at the 1 in Super Bowl 49?
They were officially at the 1. But also it was second down.
After they fucking spiked it. Yes. They wasted down in both this most important regular season
game. They didn't
spike
it in 49.
That was first down.
No, Lynch had run on first down.
Oh, they ran it from the 6 to the 1 or something. Okay, yeah.
Yes. And the specter of Super Bowl 49 seemed to loom over the Seahawks here because with no timeouts remaining, with 22 seconds left, the logical play, as it was in Super Bowl 49, is still to pass in this situation. And not to bring Marshawn Lynch, who hasn't played in this entire 2-minute drive because he's not part of your passing, you know, your passing down package.
And Travis Homer played really well.
Travis Homer was fucking awesome in this game. Wow. We're going to get back to that. We'll talk about him later. And then confusion, no play call comes in. They're sitting in the huddle and you see the clock running down and you're like, did they forget to reset it? But they didn't forget to reset it. The Seahawks just didn't get a play in the confusion.
What the fuck?
It is a pretty colossal failure.
Like, what happened? I mean, I was looking at the play clock and I was doing the reset motion as if they'd forgotten to reset the play clock.
Yes.
Right? And we just fucked this up because they were so concerned with the idea of getting Marshawn Lynch into the game.
Yep.
He sort of like ran in late. I mean,
didn't have his helmet on. I mean, understandably, like, it's not like blaming him. They would have told him if he needed to have his helmet on, and he didn't.
But why are you so concerned with this? Like, if you need to run Marshawn, run him on third down.
Well, they're so concerned about this because that fucking decision and the reaction to it by the defense broke up the team. And it's the reason Richard Sherman is there. I mean, it's not the only reason. He also got older and was injured.
Salary cap is the reason Richard Sherman is there. Be cool. Injuries in the salary cap. It's not this fucking play. Everybody needs to get over the fucking play. Look, this the defense needs to get over the play. There is a salary cap, and when you have a lot of good players, they become expensive. You think scoring 3 points in the Super Bowl is why the Rams paid Jared Goff $36 million next year? You think that's what's going to break up the Rams when they inevitably have to get rid of all their good players? It's not. It's the goddamn salary cap. Get over it.
They could have afforded to bring back some guys if they had wanted to.
The real enemy is the salary cap.
I mean, I don't know if it's the enemy. I think it's probably a net positive.
Not for the players. Who is it a net positive for? It's a net positive for ownership.
It's a net positive in terms of competitive balance. I think it's fair to say.
Anyway. So that looms large, you're saying, that decision. I agree with you. Like, because of that, they're like, we need to get Marshawn in. They fucked the whole thing up. They didn't call a play. And then they just get a delay of game, and you're like, they what?
Here's the quote from Pete Carroll on it. We called the personnel, and we didn't get it communicated with the backs, that meaning Marshawn. And then also, I don't know if there was a fullback specifically in the game. I don't remember if Ballore came in. And we were late getting in there. We just didn't get it done. We didn't get the substitution done properly, and we were late with it. So,
who do we blame for this? Is it a shoddy Pete thing?
That's me all the way, Carol also said. No. We need to get to that done. I mean, it's the coaching staff. It's hard to not being there on the sidelines to allocate blame, but ultimately it rolls up to the head coach.
Okay.
So.
Well.
So the Seahawks now.
The chatter as I was walking out of this game was not about how close they were on fourth down. The chatter was about this delay of game.
Interesting. It wasn't about the third down play?
Not really. I mean, obviously, there in the moment, there are some, but there wasn't enough time to dwell on it.
Mm-hmm.
Look, a lot of shit happened very quickly.
It really did.
But this, I guess what I'm saying is that this was something that we controlled as the Seahawks, and those other things weren't as much.
Exactly. Second and goal was the pass to Lockett. I think the one that was almost intercepted.
Well, it would have been out of bounds, but yes.
Correct. Third and goal is the pass to Jacob Hollister, who is being held at the time. And he's being held while the pass is thrown. And that is traditionally called pass interference. Was not called. Notably, was not reviewed.
Why?
This
is a reviewable play, right?
Yeah.
So pass interference, after it became reviewable, becomes reviewable under 2 minutes by the booth review.
Yes. It's challengeable outside 2 minutes, inside 2 minutes.
I mean, the Seahawks wouldn't have had a timeout anyway, but...
Right.
Is this the type of situation where if the Seahawks call a timeout, all of a sudden they decide to review it, college style?
Plausibly. I mean, we did actually see that in the first half with the catch/fumble by Matt Breida, I want to say, that did end up getting reviewed after the Seahawks called a timeout, although it then turned it into an incomplete pass.
It was actually somehow worse for the Seahawks.
Which was the correct call.
Was it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that was the correct call. He didn't make a football move. He never came down with the ball. It was an incomplete pass. So the Seahawks then, fourth and goal at the 5. pass it to Hollister short of the end zone. Hollister fights for the end zone, does not probably quite get there. Ball comes out after he's stopped.
He was down at that point.
Jimmy Ward runs 100 yards the other direction completely for no reason because the game was over.
Should have been a penalty.
And then after review, ruled San Francisco ball at the goal line. Jimmy Garoppolo sneaks it out of there, and the game is over.
Oh, my God. We're so close. So close.
I mean, I do think if somehow Lynch had scored from the one, that there would have been something cathartic about that.
If they get Lynch in to run that play, and he's scoring a touchdown on that play, like, he'd done it earlier. Granted, the Niners, I think, were expecting it. And, yeah. But if he gets in there, that stadium would erupt more than it has ever erupted. Right? Like it already did the first time he scored a touchdown.
More than the tip? More than the Beastquake, I guess, actually, is probably the real question. If we're talking about eruption, Beastquake is probably number one on that scale.
It would have been in the conversation with those plays.
Yes. I mean, especially the fact that the Seahawks looked dead in this game. I mean, this is, I think, is where we should go back to.
God. We could have just given him a chance from the one. It is devastating. If you want to go back to the why we pay attention to sports comment that I was saying, the reason we pay attention to sports is because of redemption stories like this. And the fact that we didn't give, I mean, we did earlier in the game, but the fact that Marshawn didn't get his chance to score a game-winning touchdown there is just like, fuck! Like, that's just the thing I would have liked to have seen, right? Even if he doesn't get it, if he has the chance to score that play, right?
I mean, the interesting question, if he doesn't score, how many more plays can the Seahawks run?
They would have had to hustle back to the line. They're still getting two plays in.
But you would have probably called two plays in maybe that. I wonder if they tried to call two plays in the huddle. I mean, maybe that was part of the reason for the delay. I hadn't thought about that.
Three or four plays.
Yeah, they called actually. I mean, for a 2-minute drive, they had a shocking number of plays on that. Do you know how many plays they ran on that drive?
How many?
15. It was their longest drive of the game. And they had some long-ass drives.
That was their longest drive of the game?
Yeah.
I mean, wow. This was really kind of like an un-Seahawks. Like, I think that a couple of these second-half drives were probably what Pete and Shoddy want the Seahawks offense
to look
like.
It was like a Seahawks-Panthers game of old where there was like seven possessions total.
It really was. Well, I mean, that's the thing. Is like, if you looked at the defense just score-wise, you would say that the defense played pretty well, which we could transition to the defense now if you'd like. Like, you would look at it, and it was actually, like, very much an old-school Seahawks game in that way, right? Because there weren't that many drives. The defense looked good no matter what happened because they just didn't have that many chances to look bad.
I still don't think the defense looked good.
But the final score, it's not like you look at this final score and say to yourself, wow, they got destroyed by the Niners.
Yes. Well, they didn't get destroyed by the Niners. I mean, guess
the defense. Yeah, the defense only had two stops.
So there were technically nine drives.
Jimmy Garoppolo completed 81% of his passes.
Yes, technically there were nine drives for the 49ers in this game. One of them was at the end of the first half.
Uh-huh.
One of them was the Garoppolo sneak at the end of the game.
So they had seven real drives.
On those seven drives, they scored three touchdowns and two field goals, and punted twice.
I mean, they punted at very crucial times. They punted on their first and last real drives in the second half.
I mean, one question we would be asking if the Seahawks had scored is, well, I mean,
I would love to record that podcast.
Kyle Shanahan, why didn't he go for it on 4th and 1 at their own 30?
I kind of thought about that, and I was just like, it would have been we still had all three timeouts, so the game wouldn't have been over at that point. This would have been before the 2-minute warning. If he goes for it, they would have gone, if they go for it and pick it up.
They had called the first timeout after third down. We had two timeouts at that point.
Okay. But so then they would have had to...
But yes, you're correct that they would not have ended the game by picking up that first down. But they would have made it a lot more likely.
I mean, if I'm a 49ers fan, I probably want them to go for it there. Because the Seahawks still need a touchdown, right? And the Seahawks eventually did drive down to the half-inch line. Like, when they punted that, I was saying to myself, I'm like, they basically... It was when we were talking at the Lions-Packers game earlier today, it was like... this was different because they only needed a field goal, but it was like when the Lions punted the ball to the Packers on that last drive, the game's over when they did that. And that's kind of the positive part of me was saying to myself, they just punted this game away. They gave us the ball with on this side of the 2 minute warning with two timeouts left. How do you do that?
The way Russell Wilson was cooking in the second half. A weirdly poor statistical game for Russell Wilson anyway, but
was
he was
really?
Cooking. Yeah, I mean, he only averaged 5.8 yards per attempt in this game.
They never hit a deep pass. They just didn't get the long passes.
Their longest pass of the game was the 24-yarder to DK Metcalf on the final drive. Before that, they had not completed a pass of longer than 17.
So they were obviously, like, the Niners are good at taking that away, and they just never got that to, like, they weren't able to stretch the field. But like I said, this was an old-school Seahawks offensive game.
And Wilson, in the second half, Wilson ultimately only included 62.5% of his passes, but was effective enough as a runner, and
he's kind of slow now. Well, can we talk about Russell? Russell wasn't just not fast anymore.
Nick Bosa was catching him from behind a lot today.
I think that the Niners have an especially fast defense.
They do.
But, like, man, Russell Wilson did not, like, I was thinking about Trevor Lawrence yesterday, how he had that long run. And it was like, how did nobody on Ohio State catch him? If that would have been Russell Wilson, it would have been a 3 yard gain. He's also, maybe Russell Wilson's not 20 years old or whatever.
Yeah, he's definitely not. He still finished with an 83.8 QBR in this game, though, because of the 49ers opponent adjustments.
Thought Russell Wilson played an excellent game.
For sure. Oh, I'm not disputing that. It's just saying, like, his yards per attempt was actually really bad in this game.
For a game where I thought he played not,
I mean, he
not perfect, but
completed every pass he threw in the third quarter, I believe.
Really?
And
this was,
yeah, no, I think it was into the fourth quarter until there was.
If we're gonna PFF grade this shit, like, difficulty wise, the difficulty of these throws that he was making, both the, like, the touchdown to Tyler Lockett that he threw, which was absurd, but also he had to avoid tacklers on every single play.
Yes.
Like, watching the Packers earlier today and seeing some of the time, and granted, this is partially because the Niners are a very aggressive defense. They have a good secondary, which allows them to be aggressive with pass rushing, which the Lions don't have. But, like, the time that he had to throw was zero. Like, there were people there instantly. He was having to make space for himself on every single play.
I mean, also the contrast between Jimmy G constantly had receivers open, and maybe that's where we'll transition.
Okay, fine.
To talking about the defense.
I expected this podcast at some point in, like, the late second quarter, early third quarter, to just be complaining about the Seahawks defensive scheme, and then they came up with those two stops.
I mean, I tweeted in the first half, it ended up changing because the offense was so good and the defense did get a couple of timely stops. But there were a lot of 2017 Rams vibes here where it's just like these two teams are playing different sports.
Let's not talk about 2017 Rams vibes. Let's talk about 3 weeks ago Rams vibes.
Well, that's a fair point.
Because they had receivers in pockets of this defense. I'm sorry, but the Seahawks defense, as it is without a pass rush, is
and
broken.
And without Quandre Diggs.
It doesn't work. Like, this defense, if you cannot get a pass rush, this scheme does not work. Right?
So Jimmy Garoppolo, who was very good in this game as well.
I hate Jimmy Garoppolo being good.
Me too. It really drives me crazy.
If the worst things in the world are Jimmy Garoppolo and Jared Goff having good games.
18 of 22 for 285 yards.
18 of 20. I mean, he had people wide open. Did Jimmy Garoppolo make a hard throw all game?
I don't know if there's any I would say specifically hard. Now, we went to Ben Baldwin on this during the game for expected completion percentage. And he said that at that point, I think you're right. I don't think he threw another pass. His expected completion percentage was 74%. His actual completion percentage was 81%. So Garoppolo was outperforming what you... I guess he ended up at 82, so maybe he threw one more pass after that. He was outperforming what you would have expected given the openness of his receivers, but still, a 74% expected completion percentage is ridiculously high. And unlike anything we're ever going to see from the Seahawks in terms of scheming their receivers open and creating those kind of easy opportunities for Russell Wilson.
But it's also part of, like, the reason it's so high is because the Seahawks aren't playing a defensive scheme that works against this offense. There are two play callers, maybe even three play callers in this fucking division that are specifically skilled at beating this garbage Seahawks defense. They could be in any other division and it would work, basically, right? Like, are there any divisions that have this many play callers who are this good? They're not.
No.
And the Seahawks just happen to have found themselves. Pete Carroll, old man Carroll, happens to have found himself.
And let's be clear, he came within 1 inch of winning the division.
But it's just, it's kind of insane that the people who are the best against his scheme, I mean, it's partially like, it's the exact opposite of what happened with the Patriots, right? The Patriots are so good that every other team in their division just has been terrible for the last 2 decades.
Until the rise of the Dolphins.
There we go.
Let's go. Brian Flores for Coach of the Year.
Episode 9, Rise of the Dolphins. But the effect that it has had, probably granted to owed to good ownership groups or whatever, lucky draft picks, things like that, that these teams have gone out and each one has found a coach who is an offensive-minded play caller, right? Who's able to scheme against exactly the Seahawks defense.
Well, particularly the Seahawks defense, when they insist on playing base defense nearly all the time, is they continue to do in this game even after Michael Kendricks went out with a knee injury.
Can we just, this offseason, I know we'll blow the first round pick on somebody who won't play at all, but can we just find a nickel fucking corner? Is that so much to ask?
I mean, I don't know that you need to use the first round pick on that, but that would be a helpful addition.
No, we're going to blow the first round pick on some garbage. Also, they'll probably draft a center.
It's possible that Michael Kendricks will be in prison at that point. So that he can't be ruled out.
Okay. Well, we hope that doesn't happen. I like Michael Kendricks. I want Michael Kendricks on this team.
LJ Collier did not record a defensive stat. I don't know how many he was active today, wasn't he? I believe he was active.
Yeah, I was really hoping that for the Seahawks first round pick. Also, it was funny watching the Chiefs Chargers game earlier. Frank Clark just like in the backfield destroying Phil Rivers. Granted, Frank Clark costs a lot more than LJ Collier does, but yeah, like
I think Jadeveon Clowney is the more appropriate comparison there.
Well, we didn't know Jadeveon Clowney was coming.
No.
LJ Collier was our replacement for Frank Clark. They traded a first round pick to be able, they traded Frank Clark for a run-stuffing defensive end who was 24 years old and didn't even look good coming out of college and, surprise, has not been good once he's played on the team. It's just like, and those are the times that he's even been active.
And every time that Ben Baldwin and Zach Wittman tweet about this, people are like, oh, well, yeah, obviously they should have drafted the good player instead of the bad player. Check the receipts.
Oh, we knew. Come on. We've known 2 years in a row. I would love to be surprised by something.
Me too. I would also
just
love
once,
to
I would like to be pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, so the defense was bad.
The defense was bad. We know that the Niners' offense was going to pick them apart in this game. The only hope that they had was getting pass rush. Seemed like Clowney didn't play that much.
I think he played a fair amount. I just think he was generally neutralized by Joe Staley.
The Niners are a good team. They're a good offense. I think that Kyle Shanahan is probably one of, if not the best, offensive schemers in the league. I mean, they went into New Orleans and picked apart the Saints defense in their home, which is a hell of a lot better than the Seahawks defense. It's just like, we knew this was going to happen. In the end, the Seahawks defense, as opposed to that, played pretty well.
I don't know if I'd go that far.
They got two whole stops. So what happened on the big stop, which granted they had two stops. I think the first one, I don't know what happened to begin the second half. Very nice that it happened quickly. The second one though was aided by the personal foul, which who was that on? Was that on Debo?
No, it was on one of their offensive linemen, Garland.
No, it was the receiver downfield. There was a skirmish with the receiver downfield.
No.
Really?
On the final drive? The final real drive?
Yeah.
I mean, it's the penalty is on SFB Garland, and NBC showed him. So, essentially...
Oh, because there was a skirmish downfield, so they just didn't call anything on that.
Yeah, there was a skirmish downfield. It involved a lineman who was way downfield.
That was a lineman who was down there.
And Chris Collinsworth defended it by saying like he just didn't hear the whistle and was trying to make a play in the run game. It's like, I don't know if you really need to be blocking someone
making
20
a play
yards
in the
down.
Run game, 30 yards downfield?
Yeah, the running back is not coming. He's
not there.
You better
check the PFF grade on that one, Chris Collinsworth. It ain't right. Like, come on.
So that put them in deed, and it was very well timed because the down counted. So that put them in 3rd and 17. And although Raheem Mostert almost picked that up and got close enough that they could have considered going for it at 3rd and 30.
That was terrifying.
The key play there was the fact that
the clock stopped.
Well, that is also true. But he probably was expecting Deebo Samuel to come up there because the fact that literally every other time they ran a reverse in the game, the Seahawks had no idea it was coming.
If I'm scheming against the Seahawks, hey, Eagles, you want Greg Ward on end-around Miles Sanders? The Seahawks cannot defend end-arounds. Any play where the misdirection plays? Doug Peterson. Hello? Like, are you that fucking surprised that there's a misdirection? If George Kittle's leaking out one way, they're going to throw the ball to him. Hey, Shaquille Griffin, maybe defend him, right? Like, are you kidding me?
Let's not put this on individual defenders.
Okay.
This is a scheme issue.
Ken Norton. Ken Norton has to go.
I completely disagree with this take.
Ken Norton should not be back as defensive coordinator next year.
Oh, really? Because it made a big difference when they changed from...
Chris Richard.
To Ken Norton? No, it does not matter who's in the defensive coordinator role, which is why also when Dan Quinn tried to take this defense to Atlanta, didn't work. When whose predecessor, the Jaguars coach, Gus Bradley, tried to take it to Jacksonville, didn't work.
It's a trash defense. It's a defense that is only good if you have the best talent in the entire NFL.
But you know whose defense it is? It's Peter K. Clay Carroll's. It's not any of these defensive coordinators' defense.
Peter Clay Carroll has the defense where if you run a misdirection one play and have a tight end leaking out the other direction, even if they're George goddamn Kittle.
Sometimes it's a fullback. Sometimes it's the engine of their offense, Kyle Juszczyk.
How are you so confused by this?
There's only one defensive coordinator who's been able to have success running the Pete Carroll defense.
Who's that?
Robert Saleh. That's it. I mean, that's it.
Maybe you'll be looking for a job next year.
I do not find that particularly likely. He may be looking for a head coaching job.
Running the Pete Carroll defense.
He will not be looking for a defensive coordinator job.
I'm just saying, it doesn't seem like it's that complicated to defend George Kittle. Like, he should never, ever in any situation be left that wide open. I will say that I think Kyle Shanahan is very good at scheming against this defense. Some of the shit that they do doesn't feel like rocket science.
I agree with that.
Right? So they're basically running a play action where the entire line pulls one direction, plus the running back, and they run the play action in that direction, and a tight end or fullback leaks out to the other side, and every single player in the defense has no idea what's going on.
Do you think this is why the Seahawks can't execute that on offensively? Because the fact that their defense is so unable to defend it in practice that they assume it's just going to be open every time, and that it has not worked one single time this season.
If you want the Seahawks are the fucking model of that you don't need to run the ball well to be able to play action. Like, they are so bad at handling play action. Every single... I think maybe it's because they teach them to be, aggressive or whatever. Like, the Seahawks...
I don't think they were that good at defending the run today.
It's based around staying home, though, right?
Not necessarily at the linebacker level. I mean, it is at probably the safety level.
I'm just going to throw this out there. Bobby Wagner's not that good anymore.
I don't think the evidence necessarily backs that up.
I thought KJ Wright had a much better game than Bobby. He cleaned some things up, but when Bobby Wagner is in coverage, he's not the same linebacker that he once was. And when George Kittle is leaking out to one side, every single player in the defense goes into a coma. They could have run that if they wanted to. Let's say that the 49ers were fuck this. You know, you're playing, let's say that you're losing to Luka at college football and you're just you know what? I need to show him that I can fucking destroy him at college football.
So much trash.
Anytime that I want to, I'm just going to run all the plays that I know are going to work immediately. If Kyle Shanahan would have just been you know what? We're not playing games anymore. Every single play is an end around or is a misdirection play leaking a receiver out.
I mean, that's the drive they basically had after the Seahawks scored their first touchdown when they went 75 plays in 5 yards. 75 yards in 5 plays. That was whose stat line was it that had all the touchdowns and no yards? Some quarterback that showed a stat line where they had it flipped yesterday. Aided by the 49-yard completion to Juszczyk.
Yeah,
they
were just like,
oh, that's cute. You guys ran an 11-play drive to cut this to a one-score game. Boom, here's a 75-yard touchdown.
Yeah, yeah, no. It was just to put you in place. Recognize who's the real offense.
They were not even trying. The Seahawks were running clock, and the Niners were not running clock, even though the Niners led. It was very confusing.
Oh, my God. But at the same time, in the end, the Seahawks came up with just enough stops to make this a fun game.
Their offense converted, aside from the fourth and
didn't
one stop,
even need
in the
really
red zone.
Fourth down conversions. In the end, like the Seahawks, there were a lot of times.
Well, Ursua was fourth and 10.
Well, but on the previous drives, on the previous long drives, where I was like, man, these were such long drives. And it wasn't like that Husky drive at 1 a.m. against the Cal Bears where they needed like four fourth and four conversions or whatever. I mean, like they did all this on three downs because anytime they would have reached a fourth down, they were kicking a field goal or punting.
There were so many times in this, I was like, oh my God, we need to pick up this third down because we cannot punt in this situation.
Do you think Russ is just like, we're getting this right here because I know what's coming after this?
That didn't take against Arizona, as it turned out. But in this game, the Seahawks 8 of 14 on third downs, repeatedly effective in those situations. So let's talk about the offense a little bit. First off, so good to see the Beast. It's just like that first run he broke off, even in a game where the Seahawks were trailing, the crowd.
It was an 8-yard gain, and it felt like he ran for a 60-yard touchdown.
And he followed that. Was the second one was the 15-yarder?
Yeah.
His other 10 carries went for a total of 11 yards.
I mean, the thing is, Marshawn Lynch is a running back who is at the whims of his offensive line, as all running backs are.
I mean, I think at best, Marshawn Lynch was able to elevate over that with his ability to break tackles. Probably expecting him to do that at this age after not
but
having played
these
all season.
These were not even situations. You don't break tackles when three people are tackling you. Like, I think this is the underrated part of breaking tackles that people talk about.
It's got to be one person.
It has to be one. It's much easier.
Except for George Kittle. And Mom was complaining at one point. She came over to watch the second half of this game. Great. Really thrilled about that.
Yeah, you got a fun Jan experience.
Awesome there. To have her here during an extremely tense situation. When you were thinking about how much fun this is, that was not my thought. At one point, the Seahawks are unable to tackle George Kittle, and she's like,
at one point. At any point.
Well, one specific point. She's like, why can't they tackle him? I'm like, he's literally the strongest fight in the NFL.
No
three guys tried to tackle him and face masked him, and he still ran for 15 yards against the Saints, and it cost them a bye, that one play.
The Saints just feel like they should have a bye.
And, I mean, as I pointed out on Twitter, really, if anyone should be upset about not reviewing the Jacob Hollister play, the Seahawks' chances wouldn't have changed that of making the Super Bowl wouldn't have changed that much if they were the 3 seed or the 5 seed, all things considered. Saints, huge hit to their chances of making the
Super
Bowl.
They should have freaking tackled George Kittle on that play.
Travis Homer was awesome in this game.
Yeah, Travis Homer. I mean, we just knew Travis Homer was good because...
This is the thing. This is why, like, I know Rashad Penny has at least been effective this season prior to his ACL tear, and that's great. I'm happy for Rashad Penny.
We don't need to talk about why they shouldn't have drafted a running back in the first round.
But this is why.
What is this, the last 15 years of NFL commentary?
I mean,
like, no shit, they shouldn't have drafted a running back.
There might be one person listening to this who is new to the Pelton cast, has not heard this rant before. Travis Homer, 7th-round draft pick, comes in after not playing all season, 10 carries for 62 yards, a factor in the passing game, 5 catches for 30 yards.
He was very good in the
five targets. And was huge on that final drive. Picking up first downs.
I've got some news for you about when Chris Carson was drafted also.
I'm well aware. But you know who isn't aware? The Seattle Seahawks. I mean, they're kind of aware. DK Metcalf got targeted a lot in this game.
I think it was a heavy DK Metcalf game. It felt like DK was kind of, for a while, like Russ's outlet. Like, if things weren't going well, he was going to flip it to DK, which was interesting.
I mean, he is probably better suited for that from Lockett because he's just going to have a physical advantage at any time. And Lockett, it's perhaps more difficult to see because of his size, you know, that sort of thing.
If DK becomes able to come down with a lot of the, like, 50-50 balls next year or whatever, he's going to be a monster.
Lockett, after an invisible first half, wondering why he isn't being utilized better. The Seahawks did a much better job of putting him in motion, creating favorable matchups for him on the edge. 6 catches on 7 targets for 51 yards.
He's so good.
A number of those on third down. David Moore. 2 catches and 2 targets and did not fumble on either of them.
David Moore looked good on those catches.
He had a good day.
He got into space. I think the receivers in general, like, in the end, the first half was terrible, and I think that the game plan in the first half was terrible. So it's good that there are two halves to football games. The Seahawks came out thinking that they were playing. I was trying to think of what the exact right analogy was for this. They brought a something to a knife fight. What did they bring?
Like a fork?
They brought a plastic knife to a knife fight. Because this was not... This was not your Pete Carroll. In the end, it came close to that. But it wasn't like, this wasn't a Panthers game where they were going to grind it out or whatever. It was like, you're playing against Kyle Shanahan and maybe the best team in the NFL. Right?
Yep.
Like, this offense that the 49ers are running is going to thrash your defense, Pete. And I don't think they really recognized that that was going to happen. When they came out and they were like, this garbage, like, pass first down, run second down, incomplete pass first down, run second down, take it out of the playbook. It's gone, right? There was some point where it was like, okay, playtime is over, start running the real offense. And they finally did that.
Yeah.
But do that from the beginning. If you have a good offense, always run the good offense. There's basically no moments where Kyle Shanahan's like, eh, we're just going to run the shitty offense for a second here, right?
Yeah.
They ran motion in the second half. They got some play action in the mix in the second half.
I mean, they tried play action. It was just the play action bootleg that never works. I don't understand. I honestly still think that opponents are stealing the Seahawks signals somehow on those plays. Or there's some sort of tell that they have that is telling opponents when that bootleg is coming. Because it's not worked one time all season.
Why is there not one player, if that's the case, who's come from another team, who's come to, like, Quandre Diggs has been like, hey, yo, by the way, every single other team knows what you're doing.
I mean, the Seahawks had not played against Detroit this season, so I don't think
it's been on the Lions for a long time.
I don't think it was true last year. It's only been this season that the play action bootleg has not worked one time. So
the Russ keeper early was pretty interesting.
It was. They were much more aggressive about.
Also, can we get a personal foul call against Russell Wilson? Like, he got hit on the ground at least two times in situations where certain other quarterbacks definitely would have gotten that call.
I think that the players had already committed a hit by the time he began to slide. I do not think that those were personal fouls. Whereas when Aaron Rodgers got the personal foul today, it was a terrible decision by the Detroit linebacker. Is a lifelong Lions fan. I was furious about that play from the perspective of why are you hitting Aaron Rodgers, not in the standpoint that that is a wrong call. I have one more other potential rant, but I can't find video of this play to confirm it.
I want
to
see it.
Let's
have at it.
I can't find video of it. That's why
What play are you talking about?
The fourth and one where Marshawn Lynch was stopped.
Okay.
Why is Tyrone Swoops trying to block Nick Bosa? So what I can't tell for certain without watching the video.
Okay, we also freaking telegraphed that play. Like, yes. Marshawn Lynch is coming in.
Maybe I can tell that from Ben B's tweet about it, come to think of it.
I've talked about this over and over and over again, that the advantage that the offense has over the defense in general in football is that the offense knows what they're doing and the defense doesn't. But if you tell the defense what you're doing, that takes away your advantage.
Okay, so I guess they did have Jamarco Jones in there as a sixth offensive lineman, but they had him on the other side of the formation.
They were
asking Tyrone Swoops, who is not even a pass blocking tight end. He is like a pure receiving tight end.
I think Tyrone Swoops made a nice play earlier in the game.
No, he's because he was in the passing game.
Yeah.
He's not a blocker. He should not be under any circumstances blocking Nick Bosa. That's not going to end well. So they did have Jones in there. He was just on the other side of the formation.
They had Tyler Lockett in motion, I can see from the screen cap.
Yes.
Which there was a 0% chance on earth that that ball was going to Tyler Lockett. Had they ever, they gave it to him the one time against the Rams, right? That was and they ran like that weird option play at the end of on the road or at home against the Rams, right? That's the only time that they've ever given the ball to Tyler Lockett in a situation like that. Like Richard Sherman in that exact play, he could have just taken the playoff, right? Like, he knew that he was not going to have to try to tackle Tyler Lockett. They might as well gone over the intercom and instead of saying that Jamarco Jones.
I believe this is actually Sherm who's in motion following
Lockett. Oh, he's following Lockett? Yeah, see, he didn't have to do that at all. Instead of saying Jamarco Jones it was an eligible receiver, they should have announced over the intercom, we're going to run the ball to Marshawn Lynch up the middle. Because every single person on this 49ers defense knew that was coming, right? If they play action this shit and maybe leak a tight end like Tyrone Swoops out, he's running for a touchdown.
Or leak a tight end like Jamarco Jones out. You saw that Ty Sambrello touchdown. It was glorious.
I'm just saying, any player who is not Tyler Lockett, because Tyler Lockett has Sherman following, any player on this line here, if they play action to Marshawn, all 10 of the other 49ers are paying attention to Marshawn Lynch. And if you play action to him, any player could have leaked out and ran for 29 yards and a touchdown. But Brian Schottenheimer and Pete Carroll decided to tell the 49ers what their play was before they ran it.
So that happened. All right. Should I rationalize now?
I'm fully rationalized. Let me just say, going into this game, you were pretty upset with me.
As I often am.
We were talking. I thought you were going to hang up on me. Were you close to it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I should say to end the fourth in one play. It was obviously the correct decision. We are not going to second-guess Pete Carroll for going for it. In this whole, like, oh, I guess they could have used a field goal at the end of the game. They would have only been down two. The entire game plays out differently. That's the worst argument.
Yeah, the Niners would have just scored more touchdowns.
Exactly.
They could have done it whenever they wanted to, and provided that they don't get a personal foul. And even sometimes in those situations, they were within 1 yard. So you were so angry with me earlier because I was suggesting that this wasn't the most important regular season game in Seahawks history.
It was a big game. It maybe most important was the wrong designation, but the biggest. Like the atmosphere, the Sunday night football, literally everyone else around the league is watching to figure out what the playoff matchups are going to be in the NFC. Like there was actually more at stake for other teams than there was for the Seahawks, weirdly. Even though they were playing.
As the Saints were destroying the Panthers earlier in the day.
Standing too.
And as, yeah, we're standing right now. As the Lions were throwing their game away against the Packers, maybe somehow intentionally.
Intentionally?
I'm just saying.
I think they were starting David Blau at quarterback.
If you're starting David Blau at quarterback and you have the ball with a minute 33 left and the Packers have 2 timeouts, run the fucking ball once.
I mean, I suppose the logic there is we're playing for the win. We're being aggressive.
Oh, here's my impression of an announcer on week 17. Well, team has nothing to lose for this. Therefore, they decided to do a statistically good thing.
It's always my favorite because the fact that, like, oh, the coach is getting fired. Now he can do whatever he wants. Yeah. And he always does the thing that he should be doing the whole time that would help him not get fired.
They're like, this is the moment.
What are we doing here?
They've got nothing to lose. Therefore, they're going for this 4th and 1 from the 28-yard line. You're just like, what? But the magnitude of this game as those things were happening, I'm sorry to say, became lower throughout the day, because this didn't mean a bye week for the Seahawks. This game meant was one home game, which granted they would have had a much more likely chance to win a home game against the Vikings than they do going at Philadelphia.
Maybe.
Wow.
Hold on, I'm going to get to it. We'll just
but
continue your rant.
But this game just didn't matter that much in the end. Win or lose, they were going to the playoffs. Being the 3 seed and hosting one playoff game doesn't increase their chances of winning the Super Bowl that much. And if our goal is to win one home game, great. But that's not our goal. Our goal is to win the fucking Super Bowl.
I mean, winning a playoff game is an important accomplishment in and of itself.
For the fucking Buffalo Bills? For a team that has won the Super Bowl and been back to the Super Bowl?
No.
It doesn't matter as much.
No, you are never making this argument. Winning any game is an accomplishment.
We're going to flash forward to like 12 years from now and the Seahawks will have like a 10-year playoff drought. It'll be like, hey, they won a playoff game.
I mean, we've been there with Husky football. We know how this works. We've seen it before.
Look, winning the Zaxby's Heart of Dallas Bowl is an important achievement. Not everybody wins the Big Data Bowl every year.
I mean, even the Las Vegas Bowl felt pretty good after a 3-year losing streak in bowl games. So I tweeted before the game. Over the last decade, playoff teams like the Seahawks, who had better regular season records on the road than at home, have gone 17-7 in home playoff games for a 71% win percentage, and 7-11 in road playoff games for a 39% winning percentage.
Okay.
So even for teams that had demonstrated the ability to go on the road and win, much like this year's Seahawks, they played way better at home in the playoffs, because what you do over an 8-game sample at home versus road is not a meaningful thing going forward. It's just an example of splits happen. Randomness is going to happen over that small sample size. But
wow.
Then after the game,
hello,
I rationalized things.
There we go.
Only I do. Check that big O square. Just draw, cover the whole thing. Mark the whole thing.
Pumping my fist about rationalization.
I was doing some research on the Philadelphia Eagles.
Let's go.
We'll be playing next Sunday in a late game, which
is
good.
Tell me about Boston Scott.
It was really good against the Giants defense. The Seahawks are going to sell out trying to stop Boston Scott.
Oh, God. We're going to hear Pete Carroll on the show tomorrow and be like, well, the engine of their offense is Boston Scott. It's all about shutting down the backs with the Eagles.
So I was doing some season ratings.
Yes.
Since Pro Football Reference's season simple rating system isn't updated for the full season. And I was going through to do home field advantage in there, And it turns out there is no home field advantage this year.
Really?
Home teams were outscored by 12 points this season.
I've told you this. Everybody knows this. Gambling-wise,
they haven't teased it all the way down to zero.
But I'm saying that... I'm saying that home teams have done significantly worse against the spread. They're way under 500 against the spread.
Okay.
Are you receiving some sort of communique?
some sort of crazy text from our mom that appears to be misspelled.
The people want to hear it.
I need to put your tent check in the bank tomorrow. Oh, that must be rent check.
Oh.
So the Seahawks going on the road
home
may not be as big of a deal.
Home field advantage is dead.
As it used to be. And the Philadelphia Eagles are a weaker team at this point than the Minnesota Vikings due to their many injuries, although they haven't really dropped off due to injuries. This was the actual research I was trying to do. Before the bye week, when they were relatively healthy, the Eagles rated plus 0.6 points per game relative to an average team against the same opposition they faced after the bye week, including their loss to the Seahawks, rate 0.2 points per game.
Didn't they lose to the Dolphins?
They did. That was a significant chunk of the negative there.
But at the time, that felt like a terrible loss, and now it's kind of like, yeah, they lost to the Dolphins. I mean,
it's still a pretty terrible loss. But then their win over Dallas in week 16.
Well, people are like, well, this winning streak that the Eagles are on, it's like they beat the Giants, Washington, the Cowboys at home, and then the Giants again.
They played a lot of NFC.
Big fucking deal.
And it turns out,
give us the NFC schedule and see what happens.
I mean, the Cowboys are a better team than the Seahawks. It also does feel like the Eagles are a particularly good matchup for the Seahawks right now, because you know he mentioned receivers running open into acres of space.
Yeah.
You know who doesn't generate that? It's the Philadelphia Eagles.
Yes. I mean, we talked about this the last time that the most dangerous, and we'll see, I'm assuming Zach Ertz will be back for this game. It felt like the last time that the Seahawks played the Eagles, which this is not statistical, but I do think that the second time that you play a team, if you play a team two times in a year.
You know, someone had a tweet about that, and I favorite it, but I don't think I ever mentioned it on the podcast.
To me, it's a negative. If you went in there and beat them, the chances of beating them twice is not high.
I don't think it's actually a negative, but with the Seahawks in particular in the Brian Schottenheimer era, they have been very unsuccessful playing teams a second time in the season. And even though the offense eventually played well, the 49ers game still fits into that in terms of being a loss, a win the first time, a loss the second time.
The thing that I do like is playing teams a third time in a season.
Oh, do you?
Especially if you split the first two, especially if you lost the second one. And do you know when that matchup will happen? Would happen?
When is it happening?
I'm telling you right now, Seahawks 49ers in round two. If that were to come to be.
That would not come to be.
They're the number one seed. The Seahawks would be the number five seed. So unless the Vikings go into New Orleans and win, and the Seahawks beat the Eagles.
Wow, well, there you go.
You know what would be coming in round two. And you know what team I would want to play in round two more than any other team? It is the San Francisco 49ers again.
I've liked a surprising number of tweets in the past week here. This was John P. Gilbert that had that tweet that noted that they were 6-1 in the first matchup when they played teams a second time, and then 1-5 in this, or 1-6 now, including the Arizona and San Francisco games in the second game. So that is pretty shocking. I mean, there's a lot of randomness again in the 7-game sample, but that one's pretty shocking.
Boo. Field advantage is dead. play it at home, play it on the road. Look, we're just going to save some money and have an equal chance of winning.
What if we play it in London?
Yeah, play it anywhere.
Want to know there. Let's go. So we will be back with a full preview of the Eagles in the new year. But between now and then, hope everyone has a happy new year that is not marred by the Seahawks week 17 loss by San Francisco. And
wait, can I just for a second here before we go?
Sure.
I mean, are you fucking kidding me? Every single 50-50 situation in this game went against the Seahawks. I'm sorry, but Tyler Lockett, on the play that they went for the fourth down, got a first down on the third down play.
We already went over
that. Clearly got it. Did you not see this?
We already went over that.
But I'm saying it as a series of things. Hold on here. clearly got the first down there. Then
but they went over that he didn't clearly get the first down.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the one at the 1 yard line.
Yeah, no, but because that wasn't Lockett. That was
Johnny, so you were confused about that.
That's why I was confused. I was talking about that.
Oh, part. We were talking at different plays. Yeah. Okay, so but why don't you review it? Take a second and review it. Right? Like, why doesn't that happen in the situation? Then...
Well, the NFL doesn't like to have too many reviews. It slows the game down. They don't like that.
Subsequently, it's clearly a catch and a fumble for the 49ers on the following play, which the Seahawks were going to score after that. Rule it on the field and let the play play out instead of just calling him dead. What they called on the field was neither a fumble nor an incomplete pass. They called it entirely wrong. It's either a fumble and a touchdown or...
I think he could have been down. I think that was a plausible option.
The ball came out as he was going to the ground. It was not a plausible option. If they call that a fumble on the field, it stays a fumble. And if they call it a touchdown on the field, it is a touchdown for the Seahawks. And they didn't do it. I'm saying that any 50-50 balls, then on the final drive, third down, a play that should have been reviewed. If you can review it, Jacob Hollister is mauled in the end zone. They would have a play from the 1 yard line with no time on the clock. That is your Marshawn Lynch situation that
there still would have been time on the clock. What are you talking
about? With no time on the clock. With the clock not running. It's a dead ball situation. That is the Marshawn Lynch situation that we were deprived on. And the NFL deprived it from us by not reviewing that play. Look, if we're going back in time, the whole reason that they have this fucking review.
They wouldn't have run the ball on third down because you would have only got to play one play then. They would have passed it on third down and then potentially run with Marshawn on fourth down in that situation.
It would have been first and goal because it would have been a pass interference.
Okay, but they would have had time for... Probably, maybe they would have had time for three
plays. And they would have had time to call those two plays.
You would not have run the ball until you were out of time.
The entire reason that they have this pass interference rule is because of the Saints-Rams game last year. And if we could get in a time machine and add that rule to last year's game, they wouldn't have even fucking reviewed it. They wouldn't have even taken a look. It is up to the coaches because they will not review a pass interference unless... Has there ever been a pass interference that's been reviewed by the booth?
Yes.
Ever?
Yes, there have been.
Then, on this final play, if they call that a touchdown on the field, we are here celebrating a victory against the 49ers instead of a loss. But they decide to call it, and they call it, I think that they let the 49ers run it all the way down. I don't even think they called him down. Did they call it a fumble? Like these,
they called it on the field, down.
Short of the line?
Yeah.
If they call that a touchdown
on the
field.
Actually, I don't know if they called anything on the field.
They didn't call anything.
They just said they're going to replay it.
They didn't call a thing. Nobody had any idea what was going on in the stadium. It was chaos. Well, in the stadium.
It didn't.
I'm sorry, but like these refs, every single situation that was close, they ruled against the Seahawks. Did they not?
I'm sure we can find some situations where they did not rule against the Seahawks.
What? Name one.
The personal foul penalty that we talked about.
That was clearly a personal foul? What other penalties? Did the 49ers get a hold in this game? They got nothing. There are basically like no penalties called almost
very
at
few
all
penalties.
In this game.
Probably worked to the Seahawks' advantage. As usual. What was the close call that went in the Seahawks' favor? I mean, it was obviously correct, but the Russell Wilson touchdown pass where most of his body was beyond the line of scrimmage, but his foot was behind the line of scrimmage, therefore making it a legal pass. 49ers fans not understanding that rule, as it turns out on Twitter.
Shocking. But then also, Russell Wilson is getting hit repeatedly throughout the game while sliding. Nothing gets called. There's no protection for the quarterback whatsoever while he's sliding. Two different 49ers players are sliding and hitting Russell Wilson.
Did not think those were personal fouls. If they would have been called on the Seahawks, you would have been irate.
Would I?
Yes.
I would have been like, we shouldn't have done that. As I always am in these situations.
He slid extremely late when the defenders were already on top
better.
Of him.
We know better than this. Everybody knows better than to hit a quarterback while they're sliding. That's it. That's the game. That's the difference in this game. I mean, they should have had the ball. It should have been a touchdown on the final play if they called a touchdown.
I mean,
the fact
that the 49ers averaged 3.4 yards more per play was probably a factor in the game. I feel like that was an element.
Anyway.
On that note.
Thanks for listening.
Happy New Year. Thanks for listening.